All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is May 12th, 2026. Happy Inflation Day. We got CPI, the Consumer Price Index, just came out for the month of April. And the good news is there's no good news. Yeah, inflation is going higher. 3.8% year over year was the headline number. That is slightly higher than expectations of 3.7% and up rather sharply from 3.3% that we got in the prior month. So inflation moving in the wrong direction. As you may have already guessed, energy was the big driver of that, being driven by the Iran war, of course, which shows no signs of ending. We had more talk yesterday, more bluster, more things going kablooey. But again, the whole world is just whistling past the graveyard on this energy shock that we all can see coming, everybody except the people who are telling us how awesome everything in the economy is. But back on the inflation number, month over month, we came down a little bit, 0.6%. That's after the big month over month jump that we had in the prior month. That's not too surprising, but that headline number is still going higher. Core inflation also came in higher, 2.8% year over year versus 2.7% expected and up from 2.6%. So possibly a little bit of bleeding through of that higher energy cost into other things. Also possible AI playing a role a little bit in that core inflation. We've seen things like computers and smartphones getting more expensive. Al Midnight, buddy, you can't attack my feet. It's inflation day. My cat's down here mangling my feet as we talk. Where was I? Oh, yeah, the core inflation. Yep, that one's going higher. So look, what's the takeaway from this? Get ready for higher interest rates here, guys. Inflation going higher means people demand a higher payment for locking up their money, which will be worth less by the time they get it back. So right now we're looking at the 10-year yield is back to 4.43. Hey, this level is kind of important because every time we've been at this level for the last couple of weeks, we've had some kind of anonymously sourced article from Barack Ravid at Axios telling us that some major breakthrough at the peace table was happening, never mind the missiles that are crisscrossing the sky above your head. So we'll see if we get one of those today. Also, the Federal Reserve is now more likely to increase interest rates than cut interest rates, at least through the end of the year. That's according to CME futures, which are pricing in increasing likelihoods that rates are going higher, even though everybody was like, Kevin Warsh is taking over and he's going to be a Donald Trump sock puppet and just cut rates. Well, the market doesn't think so anymore. Speaking of higher rates, rates in the UK, the 10-year gilt jumped higher yesterday as pressure is building on Keir Starmer to resign his post. Apparently, the Labour Party got beaten some local elections in the UK, and now a bunch of Labour MPs are pushing him to resign. Is it really the local elections not going well, or do you think it has something to do with his appointment of Peter Mandelson as the ambassador to the U.S., you know, guy whose name was all over the Epstein list? Oh, that story that just won't die, the Epstein files. Well, at least they care about it in the UK. They don't really care about it in the US anymore, do they? You don't hear much about that anymore. Everybody's like, no, we don't talk about Bruno anymore. Meanwhile, Japan interest rates rising, their 10-year yield up and to the right, 2.55%. Oh, that's right, that other black swan or sword of Damocles that's been hanging over the market, the yen carry trade. Interest rates getting more expensive in Japan, even as they intervene in their Forex markets to keep their currency strong. We had a pretty wild sell-off in Korean stocks yesterday that were triggered by a Facebook post, believe it or not. Like, who uses Facebook anymore? Apparently, the president's policy chief in South Korea still uses Facebook because he posted that he was basically calling for a citizen dividend from AI profits to be paid for by an additional tax on the profits of AI companies, in particular chip makers in South Korea. And South Korean stocks have just been on a wild ride. I mean, the chart is going up in such a straight line on the Kospi index that it almost looks like it's going to curve backwards. And so the president's policy guy says a thing about, hey, let's tax those profits and give everybody universal basic income. And the market freaks out. 5% drop. It gained back some of those. It closed the day down about 2.5%. But it goes to show you, when things go vertical, when they start ripping up in a straight line, that volatility, you know, market is on a knife's edge in that situation. And the memory stocks, what's going on with the memory stocks, guys? Enjoy it while it lasts. If you were in one of those names, you have made stupid bank on that trade. Congratulations. If you're chasing, it's going to end in tears. Mark my words. Meanwhile, we've got OpenAI is buying a consulting firm as part of their joint venture with private equity that is going to, in their words, use forward deployed engineers to help portfolio companies understand the benefits of artificial intelligence. They're buying a sales team. That's what they're doing. Forward deployed engineers, AI, critical thinking machine. Yeah, no, you're buying a sales company. That's what you're doing because nobody wants to pay to use your product because your product kind of sucks. That's what's going on, trying to get private equity companies who have helped bankroll their ridiculous expansion of data centers to now force the other companies that they own to use the product because, oh, we forgot to make a profit along the way. Oops, our bad. Sorry about your 401k, bro. Meanwhile, we've got to end the show. We got this story about Mitsubishi Heavy Industries and their CEO saying that he sees gas turbine demand staying strong. But is that really what he said? Is it really? Stick around for the end of the show because I'm not sure that's really what he just said if you really look at the numbers that he spouted off. Guys, there's a lot going on in the world today. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this every business day. And right now, stocks are a little bit negative here, down by about 20 points, about 0.25% lower. But also interesting, 8:30 is when CPI came out. That was right around here. Market didn't really care about CPI. Almost no move on that inflation story. We'll see if that one lasts. But for now, not a big move in the S&P. The Dow virtually unchanged here, 2 points lower, 0.0% changed. Again, very little movement around CPI. Here's 8:30. Market just shrugging off that higher than expected inflation. And the NASDAQ is lower by 213 points. A little bit of a move lower in the NASDAQ here, 0.75%. But again, not much of it driven by the CPI print right here in the middle of around 8:30. Market just didn't care. The dollar is a little bit stronger here at 98.27. That's probably being driven by a combination of higher oil prices and the higher than expected inflation print, 33 basis points higher for the dollar this morning. Looking over at commodities, we have got spot gold is down about $40, $4,695. This is a day after the Indian Prime Minister told people to stop buying gold in India, which the more I think about it, if Donald Trump were to go on TV and tell people not to buy gold, I'm pretty sure the first thing I would do is go out and buy gold. But right now, with interest rates moving higher, gold does not like higher interest rates because gold competes with bonds for safe haven demand. So gold down a couple of bucks here this morning, 0.84% lower. Silver is also lower this morning at $84.40, down by $1.71 or 2% lower. But the other story with silver, look how high we went overnight, 87.20. Silver had a ripping day yesterday. That gold to silver ratio dropping fast again. And well, even though we're down today on prospects for higher rates, I still like the shiny. And guys, silver is looking really good. The setup on that chart just looks fantastic here, even though higher rates will be a headwind. Copper, meanwhile, higher by 0.4%. Platinum, 0.14% higher. Palladium is down by about 0.9%, 0.85%. And WTI crude sharply higher this morning, $101.31 for West Texas Intermediate. That's higher by $3.25 or 3.3% to the upside. We'll take a look at the oil chart in a second. First, let's do Bitcoin here. Bitcoin, $80,876. That's lower by about $850 here. Probably not liking the interest rates, probably not liking the headline inflation story. But again, Bitcoin's been hovering between 80 and 82 for about the last week, still in that range. All right, let's take a look at the oil chart here. Again, we're higher today, $101.50, up a couple of bucks here. The one thing I noticed is all this jawboning, right? We get these articles from, that's the wrong tool there. I don't want the line. Where's my squiggle maker? There it is. You know, we got Barack Ravid, he jawbones here, he jawbones here, he jawbones here. Every time we get an anonymously sourced article about peace in our time, the oil prices take a dive. But you will notice that also the 50-day moving average now, several days in a row, that's kind of acted as a floor. So we're just kind of surfing this line higher here. And right now, the 50-day moving average is about 95.5 bucks. So that's kind of like your floor, or at least your closing price floor. It has been for the last couple of weeks here. Oil moving higher. We got some interesting stories. And, you know, we'll talk about core inflation moving higher later on in the show here. You can kind of see it in weird headlines like this. Calbee's potato chip bags turn black and white on Iran war ink shortage. All right. What stage is it? Or does anybody have on the 2020s bingo card black and white chip bags being driven by war in the Middle East? That's a pretty obscure one. Somewhere out there, there's a guy with that on his bingo card, and he's going to win the $1 million prize because nobody else had it. Ink for chip packaging is made from naphtha, and naphtha was in short supply. And so they're using black and white for the chip bags because of the Iran war. So this kind of shows that there are these knock-on effects happening everywhere in the market because of the energy shortage. Energy touches everything. And rather than raise the price of their chips, which they could have done in order to keep their colorful bags, they just went black and white. I don't know. Does anybody want to buy a newspaper-looking bag of potato chips? I guess we'll find out. But it's important to say here, resins derived from naphtha, a derivative of crude oil, are typically used as a basic ingredient of commercial packaging inks. Although the shortage of the petrochemical was acute in the early days of the Iran conflict, they have since eased. So this is not an ongoing shortage. It was a shortage. However, this guy from Japan's Printing Ink Makers Association says, "We believe Calbee's decision to limit its packaging to two colors reflects an effort to conserve resources in anticipation of future conditions." So this guy at this chip company thinks the ink problem is going to get worse. He thinks the naphtha shortage is going to get worse. And well, if you look at what's going on, forget what Axios says for a minute and look at things going kablooey on the water and on land. Well, yeah, I'd say there's a very good chance that shortages of naphtha and other petrochemical derivatives are going to get worse. And then you got this one. In Bloomberg, key UAE gas plant to return to normal next year from war damage. All right, now, this is important. This is one of those gas plants. This supplies LNG to UAE, mainly for domestic consumption. But this is some of that energy infrastructure that was bombed by the Iranians during the initial wave of the war. And they're saying next year, it's going to return to operation. So even if we get peace tomorrow and there's no more missile shooting, it's still going to be almost a year before this plant is back up and running. And let's be honest, guys, we're not going to have a peace deal tomorrow. Chances are we get more attacks. Chances are this plant ends up getting bombed again. So even if we do get some kind of major breakthrough at the peace table, which is a big if, the fallout from the damage that's already been done, that is going to be an ongoing thing. Oil is not going to magically show up at the port the day after they sign on the dotted line. It's going to take a while. All right, now let's talk interest rates because they are moving higher this morning. Not that much higher, to be honest with you. The market is really shrugging off this inflation print, but the 30-year yield is back above 5%, 5.001. That's higher by a point and a half this morning. The 10-year, 4.436. That 4.43 level, that's important. Higher by 2 points and change. The 2-year yield, 3.975%, higher by almost 3 basis points. And the 1 month is actually down a half a point at 3.655. But let's take a look at this chart because I'm kind of seeing a little bit of a cup and a little bit of a handle. And here's your Axios article from Barak Ravid. And here's your Axios article from Barak Ravid. And are we going to get an Axios article today? Are we going to get peace in our time? Because we're right about this level here, this 4.43 level where historically something has happened to juice oil prices lower to relieve the pressure on the 10-year yield. So that's my squiggle drawer for today. But interest rates look poised to go higher here. Also, if you zoom way out on the 10-year chart, guys, we've kind of been in this flag pattern for the better part of 2 years or so. And I do think after the big run-up during Jerome Powell's hiking cycle, and then ever since then, we've kind of been consolidated. I think when we break out of this chart, I think the move will be to the upside. And what could be driving that? Well, how about a second wave of inflation? United States inflation rate, the annual rate in the U.S. accelerated to 3.8% in April of 2026. That's the highest since May of 2023. And compared to 3.3% in March, Figures came above forecasts of 3.7 as the oil shock triggered by war with Iran continues to push prices higher. Energy costs jumped 17.9% above the 12.5% figure in March, mostly due to gasoline, which was higher by 28.4%, and fuel oil higher by 54.3%. And there you can see over the last year or so, which direction are we going in here, guys? It's pretty obvious CPI heading higher. Let's look at a five-year chart. Okay, we're still nowhere near the levels we saw in 2022. But again, energy prices have a funny habit of bleeding over into other categories, driving core inflation higher as well. Now, on a month-over-month basis, consumer prices increased by 0.6%. Not as big of a monthly shock. The big jump came in March with the onset of the war, obviously. But this is compounding. So this is a 0.6% increase on top of the 0.9% increase we got last month, again, driven almost entirely by energy. Almost entirely by energy, because core consumer prices are also increasing. Core consumer prices in the U.S., which strips out food and energy, increased by 2.8% in the month of April. That's versus the same time last year. That is up from 2.6% and higher than the 2.7% the market was expecting. So two consecutive months of higher core inflation. Was this driven by AI, or is this higher gasoline prices spilling into other categories? Probably a little bit of both. It usually takes a couple of months for those higher energy prices to translate into higher core prices, right? Like the price of a blender or a clock on Walmart or Target. Eventually, it gets more expensive because the factory that made it paid more for energy and the truck that bought it there paid more for diesel. But that usually takes a few months to translate to sticker prices at the store. But also, AI is contributing. We've had things like smartphones getting more expensive, TVs, game consoles, anything with memory in it is getting outrageously more expensive here. That's also probably contributing to core inflation. And on a month-over-month basis, a big jump in core inflation month-over-month to 0.4%, up from 0.2% last month. So we are starting to see that bleed through into core. Now let's talk about some of the categories. This is from the BLS website. We had food went up by 3.2%, 0.5% for the month. That's the overall food index. That was driven by a combination of food at home, which went up by 2.9%, and food away from home, i.e. restaurants, up by 3.6%. Even though people are eating out less, it's still getting more expensive to eat out less. The energy index overall, 17.9% year over year. Buddy, it's inflation day. You got to go easy on me. Midnight is just blowing up the stream today. Sorry. Okay, the energy index, 3.8% for the month. So a smaller monthly jump than we got in March. That was the initial price shock that happened from the war, but continuing to rise another 3.8% on top of that. We've had gasoline was the biggest one here, 28.4%. Fuel oil, 54%. Correction, fuel oil, the biggest one. Gasoline probably affects people the most, but fuel oil also jumping big there, 54%. We also had electricity up 6.1%. including a 2.1% month-over-month increase. Some of that probably due to higher natural gas prices. A lot of that probably due to data center consumption as well. Utility pipe gas service up 3% for the year, down a fraction of a percent for the month, though. Let's see, then there's your core number, 2.8% core inflation. We had new vehicles went down a little bit during the month, negative 0.2%, but still positive year over year. Used cars and trucks were flat for the month, although down 2.7% year over year. Apparel up 4.2% for the year. What else do we have here? This is kind of interesting. Shelter inflation, 3.3% for the year, but a big jump monthly, 0.6%. That's kind of interesting. Shelter, the biggest component of shelter is driven by rent, right? Owner's equivalent rent, very flawed statistic, I know. But I'm surprised to see that moving higher here. We've seen a lot of stories about price cuts in the housing markets. Consumers are just tapped. There's not really a lot of wiggle room in monthly budgets for higher rents, but there it is. It went up 0.6% last month, still 3.3% year over year. And also transportation services up 4.3% or 0.3% for the month. And transportation services, that includes the two big inputs there are auto insurance and airline fares. I kind of expected a bigger increase in airline fares than we got in transportation services, but I think we'll probably see that in the months ahead. So all in all, higher than expected inflation, but it was in the places that was expected. Keep one eye on that shelter index. That one jumped out at me this morning. Now, looking over at the CME's Fed Watch tool, we're looking at the probability of what interest rates will be at the Fed at the end of this year, the December 9th, 2026 estimate. And this is based on interest rate futures, what the bond market is telling us they think the Fed funds rate is going to be. Now, right now, the Fed funds rate is 350 to 375. That's their target range. And you've got about two-thirds of people, 62.5%, saying that's where we're going to be in December. So the majority still thinks we do nothing for the rest of the year at the Fed. We do have a very small 2.8% chance of a single rate cut between now and December. Actually, let's refresh this. Let's make sure we have the most recent mark because we just got CPI. Let's go back to December. Okay. We have a 3% likelihood of one rate cut between now and the end of the year. But this is new, just developing in like the last couple of days. We now have a 27.5% likelihood that the Fed hikes one time between now and the end of the year. And we've even got a 3.5% chance that they hike twice, that we get 50 basis points of increases at the Fed. So the market is starting to price in a hawkish Fed here. Stocks are not pricing that in, that's for sure. Stocks are going up like there's no tomorrow, even more so in Korea. But the market is starting to contend with the likelihood that because of the Iran war, because of higher inflation, and because of asset prices going up with no regard for gravity or, I don't know, the basic laws of economics, that maybe the Fed's going to have to hike here. And we've also got interest rates sharply higher in the UK. Look at this one here. We had a big gap up yesterday, 5.119% for the UK 10-year gilt yield, their 10-year treasury. That's up 9 basis points in the last day. And I want to zoom out a little bit because where's Liz Truss? There's Liz Truss right here. This level is when the UK gilt crisis happened at the end of 2022 that resulted in Liz Truss being booted from office. Well, we've flirted with that level a couple of times over the last few years, but more recently, we have broken out above that level. We came up, we retested it, and then we moved higher. And now they're calling for Starmer's head in the UK. Starmer drama. UK borrowing costs hit post-2008 peak as leadership fears hit bond markets. Yields on UK government bonds surged to multi-decade highs on Tuesday morning as pressure mounted on Prime Minister Keir Starmer to resign from his post. That's kind of interesting. So CNBC is saying here Starmer's leadership is on a knife's edge after more than 70 Labour lawmakers called for his resignation. The calls for Starmer to resign came after the Labour Party suffered major losses in local council elections last week. Now, I did a Control F Epstein, and it doesn't show up in this article anywhere. I don't know why the UK or why CNBC doesn't want to say Epstein here, but they don't. That's why they're calling for Starmer's head here. That's why Labour lost in these local council elections, which people rarely care about. It's because Starmer appointed this guy Mandelson, who was known to be on the Epstein list, known to have ties to Epstein, still appointed him as ambassador to the U.S. anyway. And, well, Starmer has been taking a lot of flack ever since then. And now, since so many people within Labour are calling for his head, the British pound, or not the British pound, the British gilt, the UK 10-year gilt, is starting to price in the uncertainty of a leadership change. And so interest rates are heading higher here. By the way, you got to watch those interest rates in Japan too. Now 2.546. Interest rates in Japan are just marching up and to the right as they have done for a couple of years now. And again, remember, it's the arbitrage, the difference between borrowing costs in the U.S. and Japan that fuels that yen carry trade, where you borrow yen, convert them to dollars, and then buy U.S. risk assets with that money. Basically, cheap yen and cheap interest in Japan financing asset bubbles in the U.S. Well, you've got the Japanese government intervening to strengthen the yen. That makes the yen carry trade weaker. And you've got borrowing costs in Japan are rising. That also makes the yen carry trade weaker. And that's happening at a time when asset prices just keep ballooning to all-time highs. What's the worst thing that could happen? Don't answer that. Pay attention to those Japanese, UK, and US interest rates. And speaking of markets going bonkers, Korea roils market by floating citizen dividend from AI. Are we doing that? AI is going to put us all out of work, and so we need universal basic income. Is that what this story is, or is that just some politician who sees people making money and can't help himself but say, tax it, redistribute that wealth? I don't know, probably a little of both. A top South Korean policymaker said the nation should pay citizens a dividend using taxes on AI profits, underscoring growing pressure to redistribute gains from a boom that enriched chip makers like Samsung Electronics and SK Hynix. The comments in a Facebook post by presidential policy chief Kim Jong-un fueled sharp swings in Korean stocks on Tuesday as investors struggled to parse the scope of the proposals. The benchmark KOSPI sank as much as 5.1% and then paired losses after the influential policy advisor clarified that he only wanted to tap excess tax revenue. Okay, only excess revenue. Yeah, where, what does excess even mean? Nobody cares. But I'm very relieved to hear him say, no, only the excess revenue. So let's talk a little bit about it. In the time it usually takes to watch one soccer match, the KOSPI index shed more than $300 billion in value. Its sudden reversal and rebound shows how jittery sentiment has become following a rally that lifted the benchmark index nearly 86% this year through Monday. Oh my God, the index is up 86% year to date. That is drunk. While optimism remains strong, you think? Some Wall Street strategists project that the KOSPI at 10,000 foreign investors withdrew 5.6 trillion won worth of KOSPI shares on Tuesday, bringing their selling for the month to 8.8 trillion won. After some 80% gain this year, the market was getting sensitive to any news that can trigger investor jitters, said Kim Do-joon, chief investment officer at Zion Investment Management. Policy chief Kim's post was easy to draw misunderstanding from the market at such a moment. He wants to tax the profits. What's there to misunderstand? I don't see why there's anything up for debate there. Less than 5 months into the year, Korean stocks have already surpassed their world-beating rally of 2025. The gains were predominantly driven by Samsung and SK Hynix, whose shares have more than doubled this year. If Samsung and SK Hynix meet estimates and post a combined profit of roughly 500 trillion won this year, they could pay more than 100 trillion won in annual corporate taxes. That's according to Lim Jae-kyun, an analyst at KB Securities. That revenue alone could exceed the roughly 100 trillion won that the government had estimated for the entire nation's total 2026 corporate tax collections. All right, so that's how bonkers this memory thing and this chip thing has gotten in South Korea here. If just these two companies meet their estimates, these two companies that have both doubled their stocks already this year, those two companies alone will pay more taxes than the entire estimate for corporate taxes for the whole freaking country at the start of the year. And then you got this guy saying we should tax them further. We need to roll out universal basic income. And look, the market puked on that news. Here's the Facebook post somewhere around here, and the market drops 5%. These are minute candles, by the way. Market drops 5% in a span of it's about an hour and a half. The market dropped over 5%, and then he issued his clarifying remarks, and we had the market ended up closing down about 2.3% of the day off its lows, but still, the market did not like even the possibility of a windfall tax on chip companies. By the way, speaking of South Korean chip companies, again, keep an eye on that, the possibility of a strike at Samsung. Shout out to M&J who brought that one to my attention. That's one that's lurking in the background. We'll know later this month whether that happens or not. Meanwhile, OpenAI is going to buy a consulting firm for their joint venture with private equity. Whatever are you up to, Sam Altman? OpenAI will acquire a consulting company to contribute to a new private equity-backed joint venture to help drive adoption of its AI software across more businesses. The ChatGPT maker said Monday it has agreed to buy consulting and engineering company tomorrow to help staff up the new entity called OpenAI Development Company, with roughly 150 employees focused on deploying AI software. Tomorrow has previously worked with companies such as Virgin Atlantic Airways and Supercell. Terms of the acquisition were not disclosed. The moves are part of a growing effort among AI model makers to convince more corporate customers to pay for the technology they've spent billions of dollars to create. It's almost as if those people need convincing, or another way to say it, it's almost as if that investment was not well made, that there are no returns on that investment. Tech firms are aggressively recruiting forward-deployed engineers, such as those working at Tomorrow, to explain to businesses how AI services can improve their operations. All right, so let's translate this corporate muckety-muck gobbledygook speak, all right? We're deploying forward-deployed engineers to explain to businesses how AI services can improve their operations in order to convince more customers to pay for the technology. All right, those aren't engineers. That's a sales guy. That's what that is. They bought a sales team. Why did they buy a sales team? Because their shit isn't selling. That's why. It's almost like there's no return on investment happening from the AI bubble. Hey, that's just me reading the tea leaves. You guys draw from that whatever you want. But OpenAI has no shortage of other people's money to buy this kind of stuff because people keep handing it over to them because they say one day they're going to turn a profit. Trust me, bro. Last but not least, now again, maybe I'm reading too much into this. You tell me. Mitsubishi Heavy sees global gas turbine demand staying strong. Is that really what they see here? Now, remember, Mitsubishi Heavy Industries, they have been selling gas turbines like crazy because there's no power to power these data centers, and the waiting period for a gas turbine is like 5 years long. Global orders for gas turbines will decline slightly this year from 2025, but remain strong due to the build-out of data centers. That's according to Mitsubishi Heavy Industries, a major manufacturer of the equipment used in power plants. Demand would be 70 to 100 gigawatts in 2026, compared with 100 gigawatts last year, Mitsubishi Heavy President Saku Ito said on an earnings press conference on Tuesday. And it's important for your capitalists here because it's Mitsubishi Heavy President. The president is not heavy. Mitsubishi Heavy is the company. I'm sure he's a very fit, not excessively rotund kind of man there. Okay, but the key thing here, he's saying orders will likely stay around 70 gigawatts annually in the 5 years through 2030. The company expects significant order opportunities and inquiries to continue. All right, so he's saying it's going to remain strong, but look at this first sentence here. Demand would be 70 to 100 gigawatts in 2026 compared with 100 gigawatts last year. All right, is that really saying demand is going to stay strong? Now, look, I get it. That's pretty high. Number one, that's a pretty wide net he's casting there, 70 to 100 versus 100 last year. Let's say it comes in at 100. Then yes, that would be staying strong. That would be orders flat year over year. And orders right now are very high, so they would be staying strong. But I couldn't help but notice that 70 number, because let's say it comes in at the lower end of the band that he just projected. Well, if it comes in at 70, then they're not staying strong. Then they're down 30% year over year. And he goes on to say they're going to stay at 70 for the next 5 years. Well, it almost sounds like Mitsubishi's heavy president, Mr. Isaku, is saying order demand for these turbines is going to go down, and it's going to go down a lot. Now, Bloomberg, which is just perennially bullish, has to say demand staying strong, but that's not how I interpret that. Demand could stay strong or it could fall high double digits year over year. And remember some of these stories about half of the data centers that have been proposed are not going to get built or could even be delayed or canceled this year. Well, that's in line with a sharp drop off in orders for these turbines. Now, it's also important to keep in mind, we're talking about orders here, right? Because gas turbines are ordered years in advance. So turbines that are ordered this year won't get delivered until 2030, 2031 even. So this says nothing about turbines that have already been ordered that are still going to be built and still going to get delivered. But the number of turbines ordered is indicative of what people are forecasting the demand for power to be several years out. And he's saying that could fall by 30%, which would be basically back to where it was last year. That would suggest a top in the demand for gas turbines, and that would suggest a top is in for the demand for data centers. Again, I have my own bias. I know I'm biased to the downside on AI. I'm aware of that, but I can't help but notice that. And I really don't think what the CEO of Mitsubishi just said is in line with the headline of Bloomberg, who is admittedly biased in the opposite of my bias here. So who's right? Is it Bloomberg or is it me? I don't know. Maybe it comes in somewhere in between. Maybe it comes in at 85 and we can just both walk away a little bit grumpy. I don't know. Hey, I just want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the algorithm on the way out. Thank you very much to my magnanimous melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. There are links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.